that's the show that just, it just started it all. So from that point forward, I was like, hey, you know, there's that band Jawbreaker on that tape. What else do you got? And he just, you know, he gave me everything he had. And that's where it all started.
This week on the Adulting Well podcast, we have Mitch Hobbs, the mystery second guitar player from Jawbreaker's Dear You tour last year. Not only is Mitch a great guitar player, he's been touring and doing guitar tech for Blake since they reunited in 2017. Mitch is also a dad and an incredibly great guy. We thoroughly enjoyed talking with him, and we hope you enjoyed the interview as well. Thank you very much for listening.
Hello and welcome to the Adulting Well podcast. I am your co-host Pepper, and I am joined as always by Kevin. Kevin, how are you?
As I was saying before we started, I'm having a pretty good day. A pretty good day, and I have to admit, I'm really excited to have Mitch Hobbs on the show. We became friends when we were both working for that one band that we tend to meet a lot of people through, and called Jawbreaker. And Mitch, I find to be both an interesting and really great guy. And so I'm super excited to have you here, Mitch. And I don't want to like mess around much. So let's get you talking about kind of who you are and maybe a little bit about your past bands, because you are kind of the mystery man to a lot of Jawbreaker fans.
Yeah, that's for sure. So I'm Mitch Hobbs. Grew up in Central Valley of California, and recently moved to Connecticut. So the main part, I guess, was being good friends with Sean Bungarner. And Sean had been working with Adam and the guys prior to the 2017 reunion. And Sean's like, hey, you want to get together and help out the band? So we did.
Had you heard of Jawbreaker before that?
I did. So in, I don't know, probably 93, I had a friend from grade school that was like, hey, you know, check out this mixtape I made, you know, and it had everything.
In grade school?
This was 93. So I was going into my senior year in high school.
Oh, okay.
And so I knew this kid in grade school. And hadn't hung out much, but he gave me a tape and it had everything on it from like Minor Threat, Jawbox. It had, you know, just great stuff on it. And, you know, the one thing that stood out was Jawbreaker. And I was like, wow, this is different because, you know, I mean, at that point in 92, you know, I'm still kind of into heavy metal. But, you know, you're always looking for something else. And, you know, most of my friends were into heavy metal. But you kind of felt like, oh, wow, there's got to be something else out there. And when he gave me that tape, it really opened my eyes. I was like, holy shit, this was the one.
That was your like door.
Yeah, that was the end. I mean, and then, you know, not too long after that, you know, him and I and my brother, Mark, you know, we went to a Gilman show. We saw Rancid for the first time.
I might have played that show.
This is my era. This is the when I was in high school, started going to Gilman. So this is really nostalgic for me.
Bill by chance?
It was the bill was the Hellbillies, AFI, Rancid. Oh, and Total Chaos was on that bill too.
Amazing.
It was an amazing Gilman show. And that's the show that just started it all. So from that point forward, I was like, hey, you know, there's that band Jawbreaker on that tape. What else do you got? And he just, you know, he gave me everything he had. And that's where it all started.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, you've played guitar for a long time, right?
I started playing guitar. Well, I started playing bass guitar in high school.
In a band or just in your bedroom or what?
Well, yeah, I started in a bedroom, and then, like, you know, my good friend Paul Romito, he had a guitar, and he's like, hey, you should get a bass. So, you know, so I got one, and, you know, we jam out in his room at, you know, 13, sure. 14 years old. And,
did you name yourselves something cool?
No, we didn't. I wish I could say we did. But then when we were all seniors in high school, and, we put a band together. So it was me, my brother, that kid, Paul, and then my friend Jeremy and my other friend Josh, and we're like, hey, let's do this. Let's put a band together.
Nice.
And so, you know, we did a couple local shows, you know, played at the high school, you know, things like that. So it didn't really go that far, but it, I mean, what an experience. I mean, I can't think of anything better as being a kid and trying that out for the first time, because it's like, you know, mm-hmm. there'd be nights where you just sit there and you'd be like, oh my God, how do I write a song? Like, what do I do? You know, mm-hmm. am I doing this right? You know, so that's where it all started. And then sure. That was short-lived, but it was good. And then right after high school.
What town did you grow up in, Mitch?
So I grew up in a town called Manteca, which is, you know, Spanish for lard, which, you know, out in California, there's all those great Spanish names for all the towns everybody lives in. The one we lived in happened to be Lard, which is kind of... kind of funny.
Yeah, but I'm familiar with that area, so
yeah the Central Valley of California, they used to have the greatest water slide park ever
called
Oakwood Lake.
Yep. And the most dangerous probably in the nation at certain times.
Very dangerous. They they also had an amphitheater that had bands come through every once in a while, and the first show I ever got to see was Striper. They played the Oakwood Lake Amphitheater. Is incredible.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. So, but you did play in some bands that actually played out and, you know, right? You did some more stuff.
So I was in a band for a while called the Plastic Cats. That was like in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. I did that with a couple of buddies, and, you know, we got to go on a couple of trips and, you know, a couple little tours, and those were fun. And then most recently I was in a band called Judith and Holofernes. I guess technically we're still together. We haven't officially broke up, which is nice, because we'll still write music and send it back and forth to each other. So, which is
awesome.
Good. But yeah, I mean, the hard part is, you know, I'm on the East Coast, and then my brother who's in the band, he's in San Francisco as well. And then, Chris, who's the singer and the guitar player in that band, he lives up in Seattle. So, makes getting together a little bit harder, but you know, it's still fun. When we get the same.
Are you playing bass in that band?
No, I play guitar.
Okay.
So I switched to guitar, probably when I was like 18. There was a band, that I was in for a while called the Green Beans. It was a punk rock band with my friend Nathan. And, nice. Their guitar player had left, and I'd been to a bunch of their shows, and he's like, any chance you would want to do this? He's like, would you like to do it? I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not? And he's like, okay, great. He's like, we're playing a show tonight. So if you could learn like 6 or 7 songs, that'd be fantastic. We did. So he sat in my bedroom for a couple hours, learned those songs. And that's been my instrument of choice.
How many bands have you joined after they had already formed?
So just that one.
Okay.
And then everything else had been, you know, stuff that we had planned out and put together ourselves.
Hoping so. I could find some trend through time.
Yeah. What instrument did your brother play?
It was funny because when we were in high school, we were in the metal band together. I played bass and he played guitar. And, when I joined the Green Beans, they had originally asked him because he played guitar, and he's like, man, I don't want to do it. And I'm like, I'll do it. So then we just kind of made the switch.
And,
so my brother started playing bass, and then that's where we just kind of swapped gear, and we're like, all right, this is it. So
nice,
kind of nice.
So at some point during all this, you met your wife and you guys started having a family. I mean,
we did.
So, and this is kind of what our show is about, is just talking about the challenges and beauty of, you know, of adulting, I guess, but more so like how do you kind of navigate it with, you know, you're trying to play some music, you got a job, you got a wife, you got kids, you know, like what, talk to us a little bit about, you know, your experience and your relationship and your kids. And I, you know, I follow you on Instagram, so I love seeing pictures of your kiddos. They're so cute.
Yeah. Yeah. Having kids definitely changes everything. It's funny. I mean, shoot, getting married changes everything. The great thing about when I met Rachel was, you know, we had a common love for music. So, you know, my buddy Anthony and Scott are the ones that set me up with her. And they're like, hey, we know this girl. She's really into music. You know, I think she likes all the same bands you do, type of thing. And so that's how we hit it off. So, you know, and the great thing about all of this is, you know, she, at one point in her life, you know, she massively into hardcore. She grew up on the East Coast. So she was, you know, went to school in New York and all that stuff. So, you know, she was in the, you know, Sick of It All, Snapcase, like great bands like that. And, you know, at one point she lived at Equal Vision Records and was, you know, doing stuff like that. So she's, was totally immersed into the scene and doing stuff like that. So when we got together, it was like, oh, this is great. Share this great love of music. And it's funny because, you know, throughout everything that's happened, you know, especially with like the Jawbreaker stuff, you know, when Sean was like, hey, you know, would you want to be, you know, roadie or guitar tech for Jawbreaker? And she's like, you're doing this, right? You know, there was no question in her mind. She's like, this is like, you got to do this. And so these are, you know, it's been a beautiful thing because, you know, there's never been like that question of like, oh God, how are we going to make this work? She's just like, yeah, just, you got to go do this. Which has been fantastic. And my kids have been really stoked on it too, because, you know, my girls are six. I have 6-year-old twins. Yeah. And, you know, they're starting to get to that age where, you know, they really like music. Unfortunately, it's not always the best stuff, but, you know, we listen to a lot of, we try to get a lot of good music in the car, but then it's like, you know, hey, can we listen to Kids Bop? You know, so we get a lot of pop music in there, but it's fun because you get to see them kind of do those things, you know, like experience music and learn about stuff. And when they came out to the Jawbreaker shows, they got to see, you know, the Linda Lindas and Jawbreaker. And they're just like, holy crap, they had a blast doing it.
I bet. Yeah, my daughter's been awesome. Growing up around it. So,
yeah, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up in a really religious household, right? So music was kind of one of those things, like, if it wasn't, you know, being played at the church, you know, it was, you know, I was hiding my, you know, my Motley Crue and my Metallica tapes underneath the bed, you know, so mom wouldn't find them. So it's an interesting dynamic because I'm like, for me, I'm like, I want my kids to experience all the music. Like, it doesn't matter if they like the pop music or, you know, whatever they want to get into, I'm totally okay with, because, you know, they're going to find their own way with music. But it's awesome to get to see them, like, kind of start this, you know. They want to go record shopping. They want to do, you know, all those things where I'm like, yeah, let's do all of that, you know.
Yeah.
What genre is Jawbreaker?
Well,
I heard you mentioned pop a lot, and I thought, oh, Jawbreaker's pop. And then I thought, no, wait, no, Jawbreaker's hardcore. And then I thought, oh, no, wait, Jawbreaker's...
Something else. It's funny because people, I guess, with everything, I've always considered them to be like a punk rock band, right? Because they kind of don't fit into the norm of whatever, pop or hardcore, whatever it is. But they share all the aspects of those, you know, those genres. And back in the day when you're trying to, you try to get people into Jawbreaker, they'd be like, well, what kind of music is it? You're like, well, just listen, you'll love it. You know,
totally.
So, I mean,
they are hard to categorize,
right? Because when I say they're punk, that also doesn't quite match, you know, the expectations that maybe someone has when they hear that, even though I'd also consider them just a punk band.
Right. I remember one time I was probably 18. I had it's 18 or 19. I had 24 hour and I took the work and I gave it to a guy to let him borrow it. And he brought it back the next day and he's like, ugh. He's like, I hate British music. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I don't like British bands. And I was like, yeah, they're not British. They're from like the Bay Area. And he's like, yeah, I'm not into it. I'm like,
wow.
Yeah. So it's funny how they could just, they could be different things to different people, which is great.
Yeah.
Agreed. They also aren't maybe something that is immediately accessible because I didn't like Jawbreaker at first.
Right.
Until I had spent some time with 24 hour actually, and then kind of worked my way back.
Sacrilege. Sacrilege.
Well, it depends when you, it's wherever you enter, right? That's your
landing. Yeah, totally. I mean, in all fairness, my introduction to them was from my brother. He had the World in Shreds compilation, volume 2, and that was the first version of Shield Your Eyes. And I thought it was a great song, but I thought there was actually better tracks on that particular compilation because I was a huge Crimpshrine fan at the time and they were on that comp. But, you know, I bought the Busy 7-inch from Adam like right after that record came out when they played at the Women's Building, and that was kind of it. I was like, okay, I'm hooked. But you know, I think it's interesting your stories about your girls too. You know, my daughter's grown up around music and I've always taken her to shows, and you've met her, Mitch. I mean, she's grown up around you guys in many ways, and because this has been going on for a while now. I mean, this is, you know, 2017, and now we're you know, it's 2022. So she's going to be 14 in November, which is hard to believe.
That's crazy.
And you know, just a baby. It seemed like when we were coming at first to, you know, like Bottom of the Hill and coming to the festivals and stuff. But, you know, I'm finding myself much more tolerant of other kinds of music because of her, because she, you know, she wants to listen to what she wants to listen to. But I can still sneak in Bikini Kill, and I can still sneak in, you know, bands that I like, and she'll like, as long as I'm not like being kind of the radio, like, you know, like a fascist about it, she'll listen to the stuff I listen to too. So, you know, and we agree on like 80s, like, British, like, you know, sort of new wave music too. Like she actually really likes like some of those bands that came out of like Depeche Mode and The Cure and stuff. She'll listen to all that stuff.
Right.
So it's like, you know, as long as I'm not being like a hard ass about it, I find that like, she's more into stuff. You know? So yeah. I just got to temper my, you know, cause I like, I'll listen to the same music I listened to, you know, in the early 90s for the rest of my life, if I could, and you know, not expand my horizons, but you know, it's good. I mean, I think that's one of the fun things about having family around, you know, is you just never know what they're going to introduce you to, you know?
Right.
And, but so, you know, you're working, you got kids, you know, you got a lot going on obviously. And you guys you're doing shows, but they're kind of sporadic with Jawbreaker. You know,
how did that start though with practicing and everything? I wouldn't mind hearing a little more about.
Well, that's what I was about to get into is, you know,
Kevin.
Well, no, because it was, you know, it was like basically one day Mitch is, you know, the guitar tech, and then all of a sudden you're like showing up in Instagram posts of them rehearsing for Dear You on the stage with the guys.
Right.
So I think that's what Josh was getting at. Like how did that happen? And talk a little bit about what that felt like being also a fan of the band.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because it's still like one of those things that it's weird that it happened, right? For all of them. So being such a huge fan of their band forever, you know, when they broke up, it was like, like, how could this happen? You know, up until, you know, 2018, when, you know, they asked me to go out on tour with them to be their guitar tech. I was like, pinch me, you know, this can't be real. And then, yeah. So like, you know, with the pandemic, like, you know, all those great shows that they were starting to put together and they just didn't happen because of the pandemic. And, so, you know, late last year, you know, just talking with Sean, because, you know, Sean and I have been friends forever. And he's like, yeah, I think shows are going to happen probably, you know, in the spring. I'm like, oh, that'd be fantastic. That'd be awesome. You know, then Adam, of course, you know, texts like, hey, you know, we're putting the shows together. Are you in? Absolutely, I'm in. And then, you know, then I get an email from Blake, and, you know, the gist of the email is, hey, Adam and I have this idea of you coming up and playing, you know, 5 or 6 songs. What would you think? And I remember, like, looking at my phone, like, you know, blinking a couple times. And then I went in the bedroom and I showed my wife, and she looks at it and she's like, oh, you're doing this, right? And I go, how can I say no? You know? So, wow. I mean, just the fact that he even asked me was just mind blowing, because, you know, yeah, I've been around the band for a long time, and, you know, I play guitar, you know, so all those things make sense. But, you know, in your mind, you start to question, like, wow, there's like 100 other guys that you could ask to do this, but you guys asked me to do it. So it was a fantastic thing for him to ask. And then, yeah, we just kind of put a plan together. And, well, the plan was learn all the songs. So this was late January. And, I just started learning songs. So I just sat down on the computer, plugged in and put the headphones on, and started from, you know, track one. And I was like, all right, my goal is this. Let me just try to learn a song a day. If I could learn a song a day, or learn it every other day, that way I'm learning a song, playing it the next day, and then trying another song, and then just keep it rolling. So that's basically what I did. So I had 6 weeks to get ready. And, you know, Blake and I had a couple of conversations about, you know, I was sending him tracks like, hey, this is what I recorded. Like, what do you think? And the funny thing is, because, you know, you guys have been around, seen the live shows, like some of those songs, they play a little bit differently than they do on the record. So you're trying to learn the record, and then you start thinking, you're like, oh man, I don't know if this is going to work. So the great thing about, you know, having Sean and all that stuff, I'm like, hey, send me all the live tracks that they played on Dear You over the last 3 years. And then I'll go from there, you know? So, yeah, just having those resources was great, because, you know, Blake is such an interesting guitar player. And because he plays things, even to this day, you know, just standing on the side of the stage, watching him play, going, oh, I didn't even know you played it like that, you know?
And, yeah.
You know, plus he's left-handed, so you're just like, all right, let me try to revert this, like spin it around. Like, how would I play this right-handed? So just trying to pick out all those, you know, those hidden tracks and those, you know, those buried tracks, those second guitar parts on Dear You. And I was sending him stuff. And
yeah, would like, you well, do both? Would you learn both so parts?
So I would just try to learn, like, the basics of that song. Like, let me play it all the way through. And then if I could play it all the way through, then let me go back and dissect it and try to figure out, you know, some of those parts. And I would send Blake stuff. I'd be like, hey, this is what I'm playing. Like, what do you think?
Right.
And he would give some guidance from there. Like, yeah, like, you know, I kind of play like that little lead part. So if you could play more of a rhythm part, or, you know, me singing, I can't really get this part, so could you do that part? So it was surreal in the sense, because, you know, I'm like, holy shit, like, these songs were the songs, like, you know, I sat in my room when I was a teenager trying to learn, and now here I am, you know, 25, 27 years later, going, I'm doing the same thing I was doing when I was a teenager. And I'm like, this is awesome. But I'm doing it for, like, I'm going to actually play a show with Jawbreaker. I'm like, so this is weird. So, so I learned everything. And then flew to Olympia, because that's where they were doing the rehearsals for, before they hit the Seattle show. And we had 2 days of practice, and, I just kind of jumped in and just went for it. So, it was a crazy experience because, you know, like, you know, my role is always just to be there, you know, make sure everything's working great and plugged in, and if there's any issues, you fix it. And then when you're standing there with a guitar in your hand going, holy shit, okay, don't mess this up. Don't, whatever you do, don't mess this up. And I think for the most part, I didn't do too bad. So,
wait, do you have two jobs now, or did they have get another guitar tech?
They had two jobs.
No, so I was doing both. Yeah, which was awesome. It was, listen, I wouldn't have wanted that any other way. Like, to me, yeah. I love, like, the whole aspect of, like, you know, you always see the memes of, like, you know, what it's like to be on tour, what people think of it, you know, what you think of it. And then, you know, I love every aspect of doing that job. It's like one of those things where I'm like, you know, the bus stops or the van stops and you're like, all right, what kind of fucked up shit are we going to see when we go in there? You know, because you get, you know, every place is different. You know, there could be power issues. There could be all these things. So you get everything set up and it turns on and you're just like, that's 50% of your job right there. But then
getting, you know, the gear on stage and working.
Yeah. You get on stage and you're working and then you get everything plugged in. And then, you know, for us and, you know, me and Hayes, Corey, you know, we're kind of like the default band for Sean, you know, for sound check before the guys get there. So, you know, it was fantastic, especially this last run, because Hayes and I have always talked about it. We're like, oh, we should learn some Jawbreaker songs, you know, when we get up there and play. Because usually it's just a mismatch of whatever, you know, pick a chord and then we just kind of jam out on it, you know? So this time we're like, all right, let's really play Jawbreaker songs. And
that's
Corey
awesome.
Was fantastic because she just jumped up there and she's like, oh yeah. And then she'd hammer out those beats and you're just like, this is fantastic. So
yeah,
now I just got to, you know, learn how to sing and might help out a little bit.
What, I got to ask, cause you know, we're all kind of Bay Area adjacent growing up here. What was it like to play like multiple sold out shows at the Fillmore in San Francisco?
That was fantastic. Cause that was like, you know, like I had family there, all my friends were there. And then, you know, so the funny part with it is at that point, it was still pretty new. Like everybody's like,
yeah,
who's that guy? You know?
Yeah.
The funny part was the first show in Seattle, about five songs in, I looked down and this guy is giving the craziest look and he's looking at Blake and he goes, who the fuck is that guy? You know, and then it was like, I was just like, you know, just kind of nodding my head and you're just like, and so when you get through it, you know, and even in the Portland show, people would be like, who is this guy? And then in San Francisco, it was funny because after the first show, I got off stage and jumped down stage and I was hanging out with my brother and my friends. And this guy was just wasted. He was super wasted, but he locks eyes with me and he comes walking over and he goes, who are you? I go, I'm and he goes, where did you come from? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, that was crazy. And I'm like, thanks. He's like, no, crazy in a good way. He's like, I didn't know this was happening. And I'm like, yeah, neither did I, you know? So it was a great experience for both of us, I guess, you know?
I love that you get the drunk Jawbreaker fan experience.
Oh man, so many. I mean,
well, and that was the constant question on the social media boards too. Like, who's Mitch? Who is this guy? And you're like,
I texted you after that show. Yeah,
I'm on the boards. I'm right here. It's me.
Yeah,
I've worked for them since they got back together.
Yeah. Well, the question was like, oh my God, is it this guy or is it this person? Did they get? Who did they get? And then they're like, wait, well, Mitch. And they're like, who's Mitch? And you know, because I'm on the Jawbreaker fan page on on Facebook.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was a huge thread going through. And you're just like,
yep.
I'm like, oh, I'm not going to say anything. I was trying to keep it a secret. Not that it was a secret or anything, because they had posted the Instagram thing. But it was more like, you know, I wanted to surprise a couple of my friends, but then it just got out. And then
it got out.
Well, because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, like, you know, I was practicing and we rehearsed and I played the shows, but up until that point, I was like, oh my God, is this really going to happen? I mean, I was standing on stage in Seattle thinking, okay, I guess this is really happening, you know?
Yeah.
Sure. And then those San Francisco shows were just, God, those were phenomenal shows. Jawbox, Team Dresh, just,
I mean, just. Yeah, we've been talking to the Jawbox crew. We had Kim on. And we're interviewing Zach, and I just got in contact with Jay, so we're gonna have all of them on the show. But I will say, those San
Francisco interviewing shows, every band in history in alphabetical order.
That's right.
Awesome. Wondering why. That's
right. Yep. So you know, we're trying. We're doing our best over here. We're trying to adult as well as we can.
Yeah.
But I've been to a lot. Obviously, I mean, a lot of their shows, I've been to a lot of the reunion shows. Those were really, the sound was incredible. The Fillmore, it lends itself to good sound anyway, because it's such a ridiculous venue.
Yeah.
But the sonic space that it filled up having a second guitar player on the Dear You songs was totally like, it completely changed the dynamics.
It was rad. Live. It was, you crushed
and,
it.
And I love that people for most of the tour, are like, who the fuck is Mitch? Because they're used to bands getting like heavy hitters. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's what it
like,
was. Yeah.
Like, you know, the
Flash.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, Jawbox, Brooks is playing from them now from War on Women. Right. And like, so it's like you're used to these bands, like they're going to get a hired gun, you know, it's going to be somebody that they've like toured with, you know what I mean? Like some, you know, like, oh wow, there's Steven Egerton playing with, you know, Jawbreaker. Yeah,
right.
And people show up and they're like, I recognize that dude, but I don't know from where. You know, little did they know they recognized you from your photo on Facebook.
right. Like, oh, that's good. Talks about gear all the time. Yeah.
Well, about it's funny because, like, pedals.
Right. Oh, that's like, yeah, the number one question. Like, what's the settings and what pedals does he play? You know? And I'm always happy to answer those questions. But it was funny because, you know, Jawbreaker had went out with War on Women in 2018 or 2019. You know, and then getting to meet those guys and talk with Brooks about, you know, all kinds of stuff. And then when he joined Jawbox, I was like, dude, that's awesome. He's like, yeah, this is, you know, that one of those things. And, you know, so it's just cool to hear his experience, you know, doing the same thing. Everybody's like, who's that guy? You know, with Brooks is, I mean, shit, that guy, War on Women, incredible band, you know, and they're out there amazing, making it happen. And they're just, I mean, the guy's everything, his style, his, you know, his amps, you know, his, the guitar with the aluminum neck, you're just like, it doesn't get cooler than that. And then you mix that in with,
absolute ripper. I mean, he is so good. Like it's actually insane to watch him, because again, it was a situation. I know they'd practiced for a while, but it's not like he wrote those songs with Jay and the band and recorded them. I mean, this is like, you know, I mean, and he has a different sound, you know, than their longtime guitar player. And it just is, it was great. It was a phenomenal show. I mean, they're another band that I just love seeing live. Just watching Zach alone is worth the price of admission. Cause he's just totally nuts.
Absolutely. I mean,
one of the best drummers on the planet and does not get enough credit. You know, I'm really excited to interview him.
Right. Oh, I mean, just being side stage, watching him play, you know, all those shows was just, it's such a highlight because you're just, it's hard to take your eyes off of him because he just kills it every single time he plays, which is
blood all over the snare drum. And
yeah. I mean, it's just fantastic.
So what's, you know, we're going to inch toward the 45 minute mark, in a, you know, we got about 10 minutes. So talk a little bit about like what else you got going on. Cause you guys, I mean, big move to the East Coast. That's a huge move. And I know your wife's originally, she's from back there originally, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, talk a little bit about that transitions. We joked about it at the beginning, but what's the transition been like for you and your family? I'm sure the girls are great because they're around family back there too, but what's it been like?
The great thing about kids is they're pretty resilient. They just go with the flow. They're like, all right, this is what we're doing now, you know? So, the move was, we moved here in 2020. So right at the height of the pandemic, and it was, you know, once we decided to do it, you know, make the jump, we're like, all right, let's just do it. Mm-hmm. If we're going to do it, you know, that was the right time.
Sure.
So we packed everything up and moved across, and it's been crazy because it's like, you're kind of starting over. You know, I had, when I had left California, I'd been with my job for like a little over 15 years. We went through a massive layoff. That's kind of what sparked, you know, the move back. Plus the girls were going to be in school. So it was time. And as, you know, as much as I love California, there was things I didn't like about it. You know, it was just living in the Bay Area is tough, you know, and you're trying to, raise a family in the Bay Area. It's hard, it's expensive, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you start to think, you're like, okay, well, what do I want to do? You know, cause you get, you know, it's the devil, you know, I was with that job for so long that it's just like, all right, it's going to be really weird to start over. And then, you know, came out here and, started working, worked for a beverage company. So I'm a warehouse manager by trade. That's my, that's my official title, for what I do. You know, so I did that and it wasn't very nice. It was different. It was a small company. It was a startup, you know, so going from the extreme corporate job to, you know, the little mom and pop job, was a huge transition. But I did that for a year. And then once Jawbreaker called, and it was time to go on tour, you know, I did that. So now I'm, back in the, management game and just trying to do all the things that you do in suburban life. So, you know, we're in the process of trying to buy a house.
That's stressful.
It's really stressful.
Can be stressful.
And it's like one of those things, you know, 45 years in and you're finally starting this process. You're like, holy crap, this is what an adult, you know, this is what being adult feels like. And it's a weird, it's a weird feeling, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of our guests, I mean, definitely the hosts are finding mid-40s like, oh, I probably should have been a little more mature in some areas.
Yes. Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, having kids later in life, I shouldn't say later in life, I'm still young.
Spring chicken.
But, you know, I think about all the things like my wife and I did in my 20s, my 30s, I wouldn't trade any of that for the world, you know? And then when you finally have kids, you're like, you always think about it, like, God, I should have did this in my 20s. This is fantastic, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, now it's like, now you're just experiencing it and trying to do all those things and trying to find the place, you know, where they have roots and, you know, this is where we stay.
Right.
It'd be good. You know, it's good for them.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a great place in this part of the country to live in.
It's beautiful in the fall. It's been miserable this summer. It's been so hot and the humidity.
Yeah. The heat back there has been terrible this summer.
Yeah. But God, it's beautiful here, you know?
Yeah. Sure.
My family's, you know, my wife's family's here and they're just fantastic people. And I just couldn't think of a better situation to be in. You know,
that's amazing. You know, you said you asked yourself, what do we need? And I think a lot of people kind of ask themselves that when COVID struck. And I found, you know, some of us found we didn't need to go into San Francisco to work anymore. Right. And kind of going like, we don't go out really anymore. So what do we need? We need coffee, right? Like good coffee. And yeah. And I live in Oakland. So we talk about probably a lot of the same things that you and your partner talked about as far as it being fantastic, but also a little rough, you know, a little hard to deal with sometimes.
Because it's a tough, it's a tough one. I mean, it's so expensive here now to live. And, you know, it's like the way the housing market is, like we, if we sold our house in where we live right now, we wouldn't be able to buy anywhere really in the Bay Area. I mean, because we just wouldn't have the cash to do it. Like we still have a mortgage and it's like, it makes it impossible because people are paying cash for homes here, you know? Yeah. So it's just like, there's no like re-entry into the housing market in the Bay Area at this point. We're basically we're going to stay here. Or we're going to, you know, buy a place somewhere else and rent this place. We can't get rid of it ever. You know, it would be impossible. So, you know,
or leave and never come back.
Yeah. Know, or leave and never come back.
That's what we keep looking at. Like, yeah. And that's, worth going to Portland or whatever, but
But, you know, I think one last thing I wanted to kind of cover because you got, you know, along with like, who the hell is this guy, Mitch, who the fuck is that guy? You got a lot of love from the fans of the Jawbreaker on this tour, like a lot. And people were like really stoked on the boards. It was like sort of this thing, I think, and this is not just like related to them. I think from as people, a lot of people who listen to music also play music. And so the idea that a longtime fan slash somebody that worked for the band could suddenly be playing second guitar on this like monumental tour was sort of inspirational, you know? And I just want to say, like, you know, watching this sort of formula, Rich Egan and I talk a lot. We're very close friends. And, you know, Adam and I still talk a lot, even though I don't work with the band anymore. But the consensus was the way that you handled people and were like, kind of like the way you dealt with, especially like suddenly people being like, Mitch, was really commendable, you know? But I also think you got a lot of love coming the other way. Like people that longtime fans were like super stoked to have that extra oomph on those songs.
Oh, Jawbreaker sounded, I mean, I've seen Jawbreaker, you know, since forever, but they sound better.
Better than ever.
You guys sounded better than I think you've ever sounded. It was so full and so good and so big on those songs that you didn't get to have that Dear You kind of bigness and those layers, you know, because Dear You is one of those ones you can put on and there's just hear a million layers in there and you're able to kind of do that live now. It's fantastic.
So talk a little bit about those interactions, because I know you had a lot of them on the road. I mean, people were like,
absolutely. I mean, you know, everywhere you went, you know, you got all those things like, who's this guy? And like, oh my God, you're Mitch, you know? And it's just like, you know, for me, I'm like, you know, I'm just the type of guy that kind of keeps to himself, you know, but, you know, I like being out and mixing it up and, you know, I love meeting people. I mean, you know, meeting you, Kevin, I mean, it was just, you know, that, you know, doing those two shows at Great American and Bottom of the Hill, you know, when they first got back together was just, I was like, oh my God, you know, it was an eye-opening experience for me because you're like, holy crap, there's people that are out here that love it just as much as I do.
Yeah.
So when you get to have that interaction with somebody and, you know, they tell you those things, it's awesome because, you know, I think about all the people that I've got to interact with over all the shows, you know, like Bill and Michelle in Chicago, you know, those like super fans in Chicago. And
shout out Bill and Michelle,
you know, you get to hang out. Yeah. I mean, they're just fantastic. And then all the bands that you get, you know, you become friends with, you know, during the course of these shows, like everybody in Pogo, I mean, just unbelievable. Those just genuinely awesome people, Warren Women, you know, all those bands. And then you get to meet, like, you know, I'm a huge fan of Jawbox. It's like, you know, you're meeting the guys in Jawbox and you're just like, you know, how do you play it cool and not be like super fanboy, but at the same time be like, oh my God, you know, Jay Robbins, he told me, he's like, he's like, yeah, he's like, this Jawbreaker is like, those songs sound like really, really good. And I'm like, and you know, you're just like,
wow, cool,
thank you. You know, wow. And he's like, you know, you're filling it out. It's one of those things where you're just like, okay, this is great.
That's an amazingly powerful thing.
Oh my God. What a compliment.
That experience.
Right? Yeah. I mean, well, it's one of those things where you're like, okay. Like, you're not talking about me, you know, it's one of those things where you're just like, I'm just here to help. And I'm just glad I was able to do it. Cause I mean, you know, you always get the, being the tech, you know, you hand out the set list at the end of the night and everybody's like, Mitch, you know, give me the set list. And
sure.
You know, you get to meet so many great people just doing that.
Yeah.
But then just being able to talk to everybody, after the shows, I mean, it's just life changing in the sense it's like, you know, how many cool people you got to meet, and interact with. It's just,
right.
I don't know. It's just, you can't put words into it because it's fun for me and it's fun for them.
Yep.
So everybody's just sharing that love with, you know, of that band, and which I still do.
You're like a superhero. You manage this warehouse by day and then you go out at night and spread joy and to cheer right. and hope to all these people.
Well, I mean,
you know, I just tried to bring the PMA and
yeah, but you and, did. And that's the thing. That's kind of where I was going with the question. And I wanted to kind of like, that's yeah. why I wanted to wrap with this stuff is you did like you brought a really, and I feel like that the circle is very tight already. But it yeah. felt like you kind yeah. of like allowed a little bit more like kind of like joy on the end of it too. Like it, your presence on stage, everybody that knows all you guys and the people that I talked to at the shows were like, dude, Mitch is stoked. It's so awesome. Like, it's like, it was yeah. so awesome to yeah. see. And I think yeah. like, for me, and this is again, not talking about a specific band that really brings the joy to music for me when I see someone playing, regardless of whether I love what they're playing particularly, but they love what they're doing. And there's some bands right. that I listen to now that like I wouldn't have given a shot in a million years in my late teens and early 20s. But when I've seen them live, they've been so amazing and their interactions with the audience and their sort of like just presence on stage brought a level of joy to the music that was like undeniable. And I think like, really, that's like about as punk as you can get. Like you're up there just ripping it and just like so excited to be, you know, just like playing the stuff you love. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
because that takes the restraint out of music. You know what I mean? Like you're not doing it
because
you're trying to sell a million records. You're up there because you simply love it. And
yeah, there could have been a different vibe up there. You know, like it could have been a more aggressive vibe or someone that had a little more energy and it might have thrown things yeah. off. And I think you had kind of the perfect vibe yep. up there.
But
you yeah, know, I think after the first show they get a, you know, they got a bad review in Spin that was just like, it looks like these guys are just kind of going through the motion. I was like, well, I was scared shitless. So I was trying not to mess up. So that was my excuse.
Were you running into rooms and like hiding the Spin magazine so Blake wouldn't read it? Is it like a movie? No.
I think it came out I think he's the one that I think it was either Rich or Blake that talked about it first, and we're just like, oh, I gotta read this thing.
Yeah,
and
it's always amazing what those guys find funny. I mean, we've had them all on the show, Joshua. You know, I mean, it's like,
yeah,
you just never know what the fuck they're gonna laugh at, right? Like, it's like anybody, right? Like,
right.
You just don't know. Like, they thought the bootleg shirts that I bought outside the Palladium were hilarious. You know, I was pissed, but
that was hilarious.
They like, I bought one for Blake, and he actually took it home. You know, he thought it was funny. Yeah. So,
well, he did the same thing in L.A. They bought one outside of, or no. Maybe Rich got it for free. I can't remember, but I mean, he wore it through half the tour.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, so
but that's the kind of stuff like,
it's just one of those things.
Yeah. You can't. So
yeah.
What are your plans? Are you going to continue to play music with your brother and do the band long distance?
Yeah. I mean, you know,
shout out to your brother too.
He's a great guy. Yeah. Shout out to my brother, Mark.
Yeah, Mark's an awesome dude.
Yeah. I mean, I play music every day.
Yeah.
I try to play music every day. and I try to write music as much as I can.
Nice.
So, you know, and then, you know, I'm like that baseball player that's just trying to stay ready, you know?
Yep.
If they call up again, and if Jawbreaker needs me again, then I'm here for him.
Yep. Well, sounds like it might happen. So, you know, more to be revealed, Adulting Well listeners.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
But hey, Mitch, this has been a pleasure. Like, this time flew by, and I'll talk to you anytime. Like, when we run into each other, it's like, all right, better pull up a stool. It's going to be a little while, you know? So I'm so excited that you agreed to come on the show, and I feel like we're like revealing the real Mitch to all these people that got to see you play in these venues across the country this year. So, you know, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
When you asked me to do it, I was shocked. I was like, why would Kevin want to talk to me?
Oh, come on, man.
It's like, you kind of...
Because we need everybody in the band.
Well, I think also, it's just such a unique happening in the world of music when, you know, they're playing these multi-sold out shows and they're like, we don't want to go get a gun here, like a hired gun. We want somebody that knows our songs, knows our sound, knows how to communicate with us. And like, that's the way music should be, right? I mean, those dudes are like a family. You just basically, they adopted another brother for the tour. And it was just really, it was amazing. I mean, the whole thing was amazing. Beyond that, I find you to be such a likable guy, and I enjoy the time that we get to hang out. So it's fun to have you on the show, just honestly. And this is what the show's about. So thanks for doing it.
It was fun, and I appreciate you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you very much for listening. We really appreciate Mitch coming on the show. Adulting Well Podcast is a production of DBI Media in association with Glassbox Media. If you have an opportunity, please go to your favorite podcast distributor and hit that follow button. You can support us on Patreon, Adulting Well Podcast, as well as visit our website, adultingwellpodcast.com. We're on all the socials, easy to find. Huge thanks to our amazing production team, Ford Shelberg for editing, Mason Ferris for keeping us together. We'll see you again next week. Thank you one more time for listening.